Oh, there we go. Okay, so hereby now, this time for sure, call the meeting of the Constitutional Council to order, meeting on May 1st at 6:20 p.m., 2003, the SSU offices. This meeting was called due to two cases being filed by Henry Hausner, perhaps we should just start with a round of introductions. I'm Bill Curry, Chair of the Constitutional Council.
I'm Sandra Liu, on the Constitutional Council.
Michael Barge, Constitutional Council.
Walter Shen with the Viennese Ball Committee.
Andrea Christensen with Viennese Ball.
Howard Shen with the Viennese Ball.
Henry Tausner, Petitioner.
I'm Eleanor Williams, I'm Elections Commissioner.
And Robert Rubitsky, Constitutional Council.
Okay, so moving on, we have two cases to hear tonight. First of which is for the case one, which is with regards to the campaign practice code violates the ASSU Constitution, according to Mr. Hausner. So, first of all, do any members of the council have any questions? Just sort of for the format, basically we've received all this stuff beforehand. If you have any questions, we're going to ask you and then come to a conclusion. So it's sort of a fairly closed meeting, to be honest. It's not, because we're trying to limit time as much as possible and keep things short, which is why we had the five-day period, the three-day period, all that sort of stuff. So does anyone have any questions for either side in this case?
Curious to know whether the Elections Commissioner is aware of the prior Constitutional Council ruling for violation of the First Amendment.
I was vaguely aware of it. Like I said in my statement, given the short period of time, like I wasn't aware of the details of it, and we basically just got, we got the campaign practice code out as soon as we possibly could. We went to certain steps to make sure that it was okay, and as far as we, you know, we were under the impression that it was fine.
Oh, how did you become aware?
Basically through, I heard from Monica that Henry was making the petition about this, and how did I become aware of the prior case?
Yeah.
And then I had a meeting with Harris to discuss constitutional issues in the CPC with him, and he spoke to Alida Garcia, who was the Assistant Elections Commissioner, who was basically in charge, in large part, of compiling the campaign practice code, and so we discussed changes and we made those. That was the context under which I was brought, made aware that there had been other issues.
So just the chronology is the code had been printed by that point, so we had that conversation, and then you had the conversation. I don't know if it was me or not, but you had the conversation, and you found out that there had been a prior case where.
Could you guys speak up, by the way? Sorry to interrupt, but.
There had been a prior case where free speech issues had come up, and then what did you do afterwards?
Well, we weren't really aware that the free speech issues were the main problem. From our understanding, we thought that the issue was that the Elections Commission might be misrepresenting itself as a body that could take certain action against students when in fact we couldn't. And so that was the focus of our amendments to campaign practice code. And so the free speech thing, like, we didn't address that matter in detail because we weren't aware of how serious it was.
Did you
go ahead? I'm sorry, just to clarify. So you were aware of the Constitutional Council ruling, but you didn't read it or didn't find out what it was actually about?
Right, because when we had the conversation with Harris and he looked through the whole campaign practice code, like, we were under the impression that the issue with this one was the part of the issue. We didn't, like I said, I didn't get into the details of the prior case at that time.
Did you get a chance to look at it? Actually read it?
I read it briefly, but I didn't. I wasn't the one who compiled this document. Well, I mean, of course I worked on it, but if you look in the, I'm sure it says in the Constitution, the Assistant Commissioner of Foreign Operations compiles it.
Okay. Any further questions from anyone? Are we prepared to deliver an opinion now, or do you want to
Actually, I just have one question, which is just for these two. Is there anything else in order that you want to have? I guess I'll start with you.
Just that, you know, we didn't intentionally try to violate anything in the Constitution. If, like I say, if I was aware that this was something that was that serious at that point, if we had had more time to have conversations with you guys and develop it in a different fashion, then it would have been different. And I think that many of us are in the ASSU are committed to working on this for next year's process and making sure that the campaign practice code that is put out for next year is in accordance with everything. And I know you've heard that before, but we're actually looking into establishing a committee, working with the Senate chair and, you know, other people in the ASSU.
I would just add, I hope I didn't imply that it was the Elections Commission's fault. I know you guys were appointed late. I just want to make sure that these points are settled so that there is that impetus for the Constitutional Council, for the Elections Commission, to make sure that's fixed for next year.
Okay. All set, Ben? So, basically what we've heard is at this point, I would be inclined to rule for the appellant. Would that be anyone? That's my meaning. You want to get into that right now? What do you think, right?
Well, tell me what an appellant is.
Sure. The appellant in for Henry.
Okay.
In terms of it appears to be basically the same thing that happened previously with regards to the Constitutional Council case. The same type of violation of the breach of the Constitution. But simply...
Yeah, it's a carbon copy, pretty much.
Okay, so in that case, we'll get our written opinion out within a week, which will be about that long, I think, as it's basically cite the previous case, and hopefully in the future this will just stop happening.
Don't do it again.
Of you guys who are on the Constitutional Council, is this the entire body?
Mm-hmm. We're currently four, yes.
Okay, so would any of you be willing to actually sit on the committee, maybe not come to all of the meetings, but just at least be involved, so that when we do modify it?
We're just about to have a bunch of turnover, so I'm going to be the only person sticking around for about the next year.
Okay.
And at this point, I'm not entirely committed to, but because this is the one issue we've dealt with previously, so this is, I think, will probably be the one that we might deal with again. So as long as that's kept clear, hopefully.
Technically, the council doesn't really serve a consultation.
Yeah,
the
point of us is that people come complain to us, and we say, okay, you broke the Constitution or you didn't, in our opinion. That's sort of our role. So, and consultation-wise, you just have one person from the council. It's not necessarily representative of the view of the council as a whole, because we, it's four or five members. So.
On the other hand, the opinion,
consulting with parliamentarians and reading the prior Constitutional Council ruling on this exact topic.
Yeah, and I realize the ASSU website to the Constitutional Council is sort of, the link is not really existent. If you do Google it, though, if you do Google Constitutional Council, all the stuff shows up right at the top. It's just it's not being done through the ASSU. Through the formal ASSU structure right now.
But I think Mike's point is pretty much right. Like,
yeah.
This section of the Constitution is pretty clear, and then I think the opinion on it, Harris wrote it.
That section of the Constitution is cribbed directly from the United States Bill of Rights. Right?
Yes, that's right. It's amendment.
It's the pretty cut and dry.
So that's right, actually. So we sort of have, you can use the Constitution, you can use this body's opinion a few years ago, whatever you write now, and if you're in doubt, there's everything that's been written on the First Amendment of the American Constitution. There's lots going on.
Okay, so
thank you.
At this point, we're going to move on.
Bill, I actually have one question.
Yeah, fire away.
When you write your opinion at that point, is that when you're going to discuss what the implications of the decision are?
Remedies and that sort of thing. I guess the proposed remedy by Henry is, it's in this case, the remedy is hopefully to motivate the Elections Commission not to do it again, I think. And I'm not exactly sure how strongly we can impose that, except just ask nicely again. So I have a feeling that the remedy will be something along those lines.
Well, I mean, the strongest way to encourage that would be to invalidate the entire election.
Yeah, which is not what
we're not
being asked.
To do that,
yeah. Yeah, so if there's anything else from that, we can perhaps move on to the second case then. Okay, so next case, Thousand versus Viennese Ball Committee. And the, essentially the gist of this, Henry, in 30 seconds, summarize your case.
Constitution says student organizations may not charge, student organizations receiving special fees cannot charge students to use their services, or cannot deprive students of their services, and makes, I think, fairly clear that that includes charging fees for their use. Viennese Ball does so, and shouldn't.
Okay. You guys, in 30 or 60 seconds, you guys summarize
everything I read?
Yeah, pretty much.
Our understanding of this has been that if for the past, we don't know how many years, it's always been a silent interpretation that charging is allowed, simply because no one has ever brought it up. The Appropriations Committee, the Undergraduate Senate, the Graduate Student Council, and the student body have all approved student groups who do double charge as it's been said previously.
Wait, sit down. Which ones did the Graduate Student Council approve?
The Stanford Concert Network, for instance. They charge a ticket free for their concert.
So
And I mean, it's always been accepted in the past. We put it on our budgets. It's made very clear that we are charging a ticket price. And the Senate, which presumably does understand the Constitution, has never stopped us. So it's kind of been the silent interpretation that this is acceptable. And we feel like changing it now will actually disrupt the system a great deal more than is worth to the ASSU or the association.
So then, do you concede that the current method violates the wording of the Constitution as written? So, I mean, your argument so far has been, well, it was always done this way, so therefore that, perhaps at the apple.
That is part of it, and also the fact that the Constitution does not actually state, it only states that a student organization may not deprive members of their services. It does not state that they may not charge for the services.
So if a student shows up at your Jamie's ball without having paid for a ticket, after having paid a special fee, they'll be allowed in.
That we've never had that situation come up, so we don't know how we would react.
And also, I mean, the way it's stated, it says a student organization who receives those fees may not deprive a student of his services. It does not necessarily mean that you cannot charge for it. It's not specifically stating that, right? And it follows the rule that, like, if you charge for it, then you're allowing everybody to pay for it. So, like, if you were to have, like, some event where you're charging a ticket fee for whatever the event is, if you do not allow somebody to buy a ticket, that would be depriving them of their service. But not by charging a fee of some sort for it does not necessarily mean you're depriving them of the service.
So the service itself is the sale of the ticket, as opposed to the event itself, is
right.
Sort of the gist of what. Okay.
Hold on. So let me follow up on that. So I just opened up this section. Student organizations that receive a special fee may not deprive any member of the association of any or all of its services. So you're saying that the sale of the ticket is the service, but the Viennese Ball itself is not a service that you provide?
I wouldn't necessarily. In many ways, it depends on the definition of service, simply because I don't know how clear that is. And I don't know how much you can define that as a service or some.
And well, additionally,
I always view being charged as the disservice, and the thing I get is that
we provide several avenues for people to not have to pay as well. So I mean, everybody has an opportunity to come to the ball. I mean, we offer like a work exchange program, for example, or they can also serve on the committee, or just we provide several avenues for people to get to come to the ball. So we work as hard as possible, just like to come up with as many options as possible for people to come to the ball. And I mean, we've never had a situation where somebody has come up to us and asked, like, you know, I'm totally like financially unable. And like, well, actually, I mean, we have, in which case we've worked out some sort of deal, like, we work exchange, for example, to for them to come. So we definitely do not deprive anybody of the opportunity to come to the ball.
Except that's that good. All of the students had to have tickets.
Okay, so that was a. Was it the rest of the argument? It was also with regards to how the petition was filed. I think you guys had a.
I just had a question about that. It's not really. It's not a major point. I just wanted to know if. When the technical term of the AC presence does actually start.
Okay. Anyone want to field that, or shall I?
Usually, the president doesn't seem to be the president until the next president takes office. Folks. Confirms that he puts their hand on the Bible.
It's certainly been the practice.
Let me just
ask this. I mean, we could actually make an opinion on this. My sense. Reading what you wrote is that you're writing it basically in an attempt to avoid this meeting. Let me just finish.
Okay, sorry.
So I guess my question is, do you still want to pursue that?
Okay.
Not if it's going to cause a huge problem, though.
No, just having to write an opinion on when the president's term starts. And
I think it would be helpful for the future if it was made a little clearer in the Constitution, because as it states, it simply states that the term is over when the next one's elected. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll have to. I mean, yeah, I think the interpretation that the next one isn't elected until the election is certified is probably right.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be my.
So the confirmations. The purpose of the confirmations by the Senate?
Senate and GSC.
And the GSC, I mean. Yeah. Did you say. Sorry, can you repeat what you said?
Yeah, sorry.
Once the election has been certified by
okay.
the Senate, yes.
Right, then the new president is elected.
Okay, so any further questions? Okay, let's see. So, are there any further arguments besides those two guys? Right now you're saying it basically summarizes that it has been the status quo, it's been interpreted as this for a long time by many bodies. That's point number one. And point number two, we are defining that you are defining the service as the sale of the ticket as opposed to the ball itself. Is that
the crux of your argument?
That was the impression that I had. And then the third one is that there's also sort of a third point there I saw that you're saying that you aren't depriving people of the service because they have an opportunity to work in exchange for entry to the ball. So
you also make special cases. If someone contacts us with a specific reason or specific situation, we do make special cases for those.
That actually happened this year. There was somebody who wanted to attend the ball, but since she was in a wheelchair, the value of the ticket wasn't as high for her, and she asked, you know, with her financial situation and also her ability to kind of take a place in the event, if there's anything we can do. And we drastically cut the ticket price for her and talked with her and said, oh, you know, what would it be worth to you to be able to attend? And we didn't want to exclude her from having a high ticket price.
What did you charge?
I believe we charged...
I think we ended up with $15.
$15 for eight. She got a date, so $30 altogether.
Okay.
But if that had seemed too high for her as well, it certainly...
You would have done something more.
We would have done mm-hmm. something more. Okay. There's a case like that, in my knowledge, hasn't come up, simply because maybe students don't realize that they can have that negotiating power. But if they were to come up, I think that would be something we could do.
Okay. Well, I got to praise you all of them. You provided extensive responses.
Yeah.
I mean, there were really, after reading them, was, at least in my mind, no lack of clarity in what you were saying. I guess it was you.
When the fate of your organization rests
yes.
in the response,
true.
It spurs you to action.
Okay.
Okay, does council have any further questions for the applicant respondent? What your proposed remedy, what was it in this case?
Essentially that since Venus Ball can't both get special fees and charge tickets, that they do one or the other in the future. I don't think there's really any use to trying to fix anything retroactively.
Does that include, we were approved for special fees this year, would that cancel that approval, or would it enable us to collect special fees for one more year before resorting to?
That's something we'd have to decide.
Yeah, that's up in the air.
I mean, is there anything you want to say on that point?
Obviously, I would prefer, if you were to decide in Henry's favor, that you give us one more year this way, so we can totally rethink our financial structure, but it's really up to you. Although the only other question I would have is, how would this affect other groups who do a similar charging pattern? You know, I know that the case is brought against us, and it could very well be a precedent, but I don't know if a case would then need to be brought against every other group that's doing this, or if it would just be kind of, they would all have the same thing that happened to us happen to them. I wasn't sure how you would handle that. Or would they be fine and it'll just be our group if you were to decide to use it?
It's an interesting question. I think with regards to us, we listen to cases that are out before us, and we rule one way or another. So, however, if we rule in this way, I can go on a limb and stand to reason to say that perhaps the undergrad senate and grad student council might take proactive steps. I know that's, who knows.
I would certainly hope the Constitution Council ruling would serve as a sort of an encouragement
that it's not
revise their approach to funding.
That's not a guarantee, though, and if they decide to disagree with us and keep pursuing that, then people will just keep coming to it. You know, people would be open to come to us with cases. Here's the precedent, and, you know, it's in many of those cases, it would be exactly the same thing. It would be rubber stamp, rubber stamp, rubber stamp. If it were to go that way.
If you decide in our favor, would the Constitution necessarily be amended to reflect that?
No, because we do not amend the Constitution. All we do is we interpret the Constitution and what it says, and so. That's a bit of a procedure.
There's a very long section in the, I think, Article 6 or 7 of the Constitution about it.
Well, it's a bit of an ordeal, so.
It's much like U.S.
Yeah, there's
the judiciary doesn't amend the Constitution, yeah. The legislature can amend the Constitution.
To amend it, you need to get, I believe, both legislative bodies to approve an amendment, or you need to get 15% of, no, some percentage of both student groups, grads and undergrads, separately to sign a petition. Then it needs to be voted on, and two-thirds of both groups need to vote in favor of it, and at least 15% of each have to be represented in that two-thirds.
Yeah, then it goes to the Board of Trustees.
And then it goes to the Board of Trustees and gets negotiated with the President of the University.
Yeah, so there's a few potential roadblocks in there. Grad student voter turnout, I think, might be one of them, I
right.
think. So
the last time it happened was in 1999.
Yeah, so, okay, do we have any more questions? Anyone? Okay. Anyone want to start offering opinions? I'm not going first this time. I've already said no. There's someone else who's doing it this time.
First, the one. Yeah, first.
So I'm inclined to say, you know, the language in the Constitution may not be optimal, but we're here to rule on the language that's in the Constitution. And it says any and all services, and that seems fairly clear to me, that if a group signs up to receive a special fee, that they are not to charge for their services to the population already paid a special fee, or to, you know, any more to the population that did not pay the special fee. That's a starting point, you guys think.
I'm inclined to think of the definition of a service as, when you're talking about the services, if your service is selling something, it to me that doesn't seem to keep in check with the actual meaning of the Constitution in that, in terms of and talk about the service. Viennese Ball Committee, the service is... sounds to me like a Viennese Ball as opposed to the sale of tickets to an external event that isn't a service, and the service is just the gateway to that. You know, there's a fair bit of semantic stuff that would have to be worked around in order for that definition to work, and I don't necessarily think that's the case. I don't think that's the case here, but anyone else?
I would think that the question of, I mean, the service question is important, but I think the issue of what deprived means is important to consider also, because, like, I think with the deprived means, like, you're barring certain people from entry, and, I mean, arguably, the ticket price is a prohibitive, you know, reason, and I don't think most people will necessarily come to you and say, can you lower the price unless they really, really want to go. They wouldn't think to do that, I think. So, I mean, perhaps, but at the same time, I think it's a little bit different than someone who has a closed event, which at least for Senate funding, we, you know, we try to make sure that events aren't closed. Like, sometimes we have private events. And so in this case, it is open. The entire campus population. I don't know if something can be done in terms of their pricing structure for tickets, so that would be depriving. But I think the word deprived is stronger than just charging an entrance fee, because, I mean, for example, like they're mentioning, the other groups that do it.
Yeah.
So I guess the last time that I looked up at this was actually in 1999.
Can you speak up,
Robert, please? Sure. So the last time I looked at this was actually in 1999, and we worked a little bit on the issue of making sure that undergrad groups would be accessible to grad students and grad groups would be accessible to undergrads, in the hopes that grad specialty only groups would emerge, and trying to make sure that kind of interaction between both populations was going to be encouraged. And I guess what strikes me about it is that an underlying assumption in a lot of the discussions that we had about how funding should work was the idea that we were trying to make sure that lots of possibilities were open to lots of students, and that we wanted to avoid having any kind of double dipping going on in terms of funding. So somewhere in here there's a part that says a special fee group can't be funded out of the general, can't also go to a general fee and ask for additional funding. And so I think one of the goals that we had was the idea that if students are making a decision, either through voting on the special fee or through their representatives on the general fee, that they should know up front what it is that they're putting money into, and to dissuade groups from going to multiple sources that are all actually coming from students. And in your case, because you're going to special fee and charging the student certainly can judge what they're being paid. But, you know, so in other words, they're probably not that confused about the idea that they're writing a check for is it $75 per couple? Okay. So they understand that, and they probably understand that they're paid a special fee. But the idea of having one place where students are paying into, and that there's a clean line, seems to be getting blurred a little bit with it. I guess that's pretty much my only comment on this, besides what the others have said.
I have another issue to bring up, I guess. Because, I mean, this kind of goes along, I don't know about selling the ticket as the service itself, but sometimes there are simply projects, Viennese Ball, concerts, whatever, that have such large budgets that need support from whatever sources. And otherwise, and without, I don't know if this is the case, but without special fee funding or some other source of funding, would not be able to put their event on.
Right.
And in that case, what would we argue in terms of, is the special fee enabling the group to provide service to the community? Granted, the community has already contributed in part, but there's still costs.
So I think the idea when we talked about this part of it, which we did a long time, was that it's good to encourage groups to go for outside funding, but that when the funding source is students, that it should be very clear where the students are paying their money into. Because essentially, this was more so an issue with the whole general fee special fee issue, but if they're paying in, whether a student group is getting their money from the special fee or the general fee, they're still ultimately getting it from the students. And so that's why, at least, this really isn't that much of an issue on this case, but that's why groups pretty much have to choose whether they're a general fee or a special fee group, because the ultimate funding source is still the students, and yeah, that's it. But yeah, I mean, aside from that, you know, I think you guys do a bunch of fundraising to lower the costs, and that's good.
We would do more if we could.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
I'm not sure if this is helpful. You guys know when this relates to our opinion or anything, but with regards to that, you're charging for tickets. At the same time, a lot of places that having their mandate to be open to everyone have suggested donations, things like that. Some things that aren't tickets, but figure that if people are willing to pay $75 for a ticket to an event, if they show up at the event that's, you know, technically free, and they see there's a suggested donation or donations can be made, that just in my opinion, it seems like there could be other avenues to explore as well, that sort of thing. And that, it doesn't have anything, just sort of more on my personal opinion. But things like that do happen in a lot of places. Museums do that, lots of events I know do that.
So, just a math question for you. And I think you might have covered this in one of your emails. If we ruled against you, and you did kind of the least imaginative thing, which is just hiking up the ticket price. This is if we chose Henry's remedy and you had a choice between the two, I'm sort of assuming that you would choose to continue charging the ticket price rather than going through the special fee. I'm only assuming that because that's where more of your money is coming from. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you would shift it all to special fee. I take it by the laughter, the answer would be no.
If it was for next year, if it was that we had to choose one or the other for next year,
yeah,
we'd have to go to the ticket price just because our special fee is not high enough to cover. It was future years, we could attempt to fund the ball entirely on special fees.
Right.
It would involve us, currently our special fee is $2 per student.
Right.
It would involve us hiking it up, I believe, to about somewhere between $6 and $8 per student.
Okay. What was your, do you happen to know what your vote was?
53%.
So you're right on the edge, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Seems to indicate that hiking up the special fee would probably result in that under, you know, not
passing. Maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, if you went with the special fee, it would hike it up to $6. On the other hand, if you went with the
least imaginative method, we haven't done actual estimates on this. I think the estimate that we come up with in the past is ticket prices would go up anywhere from $20 to $30
per couple.
Per couple. Okay. That would put each, per student, it would be over
about
$50.
Right, it's about $100 per couple, as opposed to
75. Okay. So, any other comments? Opinions? Okay, so perhaps we should go on to a vote at this point, let's say. It's the first time I've said those words here. But, so the rest of that, I'll throw this out and see what you guys think, is that, let's just say I throw out that, I will throw out a proposed ruling that, that is in favor of the appellant, and that the remedy would be that in future years, it's one or the other. Not this year, but future years, one or the other. Do you understand what I would be saying by that?
Basically, that they get a year under the current structure, and that starting
would this be 2004, 2005, where this would as in this year, because we had special fees for 2003-2004.
Yeah, that's just the most recent election.
Okay.
So the one following that
would be
one or the other, would be what I would propose. Would,
so one of the questions, given the turnover in groups and to which constitutional council
is also turnover,
often get lost along the way.
So far just once.
Is it even going to be remembered?
Six.
You want to be remembered? That's a very good question, and hopefully.
I mean, I would.
That's a very important.
You know, there's a lot of time between now and fall quarter.
Okay.
I just would hate to, you know, have to revisit this issue again.
I do agree with that. The reason why I brought that up was because now the elections have passed, and then all sorts of groups. There's many potential groups that could be affected by this ruling. And if it were for the next year, perhaps the legislative bodies could hopefully pay attention to what the ruling was, and when it comes to approving these budgets, incorporate that, was my hope. Versus if we do it for the next, for this coming year, those budgets have already been approved, and we'll basically be hearing a whole bunch of cases, probably brought forward by Henry, I would guess.
I'll be in Pittsburgh.
He'll be in Pittsburgh by then? Okay, well, there'll be someone else. There'll be someone else by then who'll be doing exactly the same thing. So I thought with regards to how we would implement it,
well, sure. That would be two places, right? I mean, there's the legislative office, and then there's the Viennese ball itself, right? You know, if it were delayed till next year, you know, you guys kind of understand, I think, if we went that way, that you shouldn't put in a... that you'd basically be in a lot of embarrassing problems if you put in a budget to the Senate that said both things.
That would be especially embarrassing, since I think I'll still be here next year, so. Yeah.
I have some concern about counting on the legislative bodies to enforce this, only because...
Gee, why?
I have no idea why.
Beyond the general problem.
The undergraduate Senate and the graduate student council don't read the ASSU Constitution.
I would never apply such a thing. I've said it to them several times. Only because, I mean, there was a year ago today, Stanford Review published an article raising the issue of double charging. Mm-hmm. I think Modica forwarded it to the Senate list last spring. I sent an email to the chair of the Senate and to a special fee coordinator in the fall to remind them this was an issue. The chair of the Appropriations Committee was aware of the issue, and they just sort of went ahead and approved
it. Sweated, right.
That, right.
Well, that's...
But if it's in the review, I mean, I guess the review has an opinion, but it probably carries... it might carry less weight than a constitutional council opinion.
That's true. Well, we did also have a quote from the then ASSU parliamentarian agreeing with that view. So, and that was technically a binding opinion on ASSU, I think. At least probably what the actual status of parliamentarian looks like is when they're reasonably.
I think it's safe to be a good suggestion.
Binding in the sense that what he wasn't lying about the Constitution. There's nothing. The parliamentarian doesn't
have
to
rule.
He can't tell people what to do.
He just advises. So the advisor would be, yeah. So in that case, if they ignore it again, then they'll come back to us, we'll order more food from Jing Jing, and basically, I think someone will...
Probably not delay it.
And it will be a very, very quick... It will be much more like the first case in this meeting. It will be, here, it's been done, going forward. I do have concerns about ruling this year, because I think it. I know for next year it sounds pretty early, but in my opinion, since they've already gone through the election, all the process, all the entire procedure has already been followed through, that it would be difficult to go back and undo that. But again, that's everyone here. Feel free to disagree with me on that.
I think I agree with you, because you're going to need time. And, okay, so I agree with the evaluation. That probably is the direction we should go. But you're going to need time to get your budget in a way that's going to make sense. As a purely technical matter, this is So as a purely technical matter, we have to find an act unconstitutional. We then have it then automatically is considered to be reversed, and then we have to find in order to unreverse it. This is how the Constitution is written, and it's kind of unfortunate. But in order to unreverse it, we have to find that you behaved in good faith. And once we find that you've behaved in good faith, we have the option of reversing or not reversing. So it's kind of an interesting leaving thing. I have no doubt that it's clear you acted in good faith here, right? You probably, until this case was brought, had not considered Article 5, Section 2A, Subsection 5. Or, I don't know, maybe you had.
I never heard of it until...
Spend more time dancing. good faith is not a question, and it doesn't seem to me like... It seems like you ought to have some time to figure out your finances, and then there are all the other student groups that conceivably someone could bring a case in the next few weeks, and basically they would all get rattled also. And again, it's better for them to have time to work it out, and hopefully for the budget chair to help them work it out too, so that they don't have to cancel events.
Okay, so I'm inclined to. I brought this up. Let's vote on the. Proceeding with the proposed remedy that I mentioned. Yep. Fire away.
So this wasn't covered specifically in Henry's in this appeal, but is it reasonable to assume, so you can argue that the group violated the Constitution by charging money after having received a special fee. Did the ASSU violate the Constitution by funding the group with a special fee, given their, you know, their known practices of charging people for events? And is that something that's within?
Are you asking whether they acted in bad faith?
What's that?
Are you going to a bad faith question?
I'm just questioning whether the ASSU is also in violation of the Constitution.
Who's complicit in violating it?
And whether, so the offshoot again, sort of motivated by the practicality of us ruling and the ruling being forgotten. If we, you know, rather than just beating up on these people, if we beat up on the ASSU as well, are they going to be more inclined to actually read the Constitution next time they go through the funding cycle?
We can hope.
I'm not going to be around to beat up the incoming people. Right.
Henry?
I can actually answer, which is that I would have much rather preferred to file the case against the ASSU, which is, I think, the organization that's actually responsible for dealing with this, rather than the random student groups. The point Josh made, and unfortunately I think he's right, is that it is not illegal. There is actually nothing illegal about the ASSU approving groups that they know will proceed to do illegal things with that money. The violation is only when the group, as far as I can tell, when the group does proceed to do something illegal.
When they actually charge.
Right.
Yeah.
Or actually, as Josh pointed out, it is technically the act of turning someone away
when
they come to the door without a ticket, rather than, I think you can make a case about the charge.
So, I'm not sure I found Josh's argument that you forwarded compelling, but in any case, the ASSU is not named in your complaint.
So we can't.
I don't think that we can find against them here.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. They should, if they're filed in it, they should have an opportunity to respond. And we always have to say, bad ASSU, the response will be what, and will be promptly forgotten. So it might be promptly forgotten anyway, but in this case, hopefully some people are paying attention. But anything else on this?
In terms of remedy, I think one of the problems, this may not be within our scope, but one of the problems with the special fee is just that so many groups are increasingly applying for it, and students are paying, undergrads are paying almost ridiculous amount. And in my 5 years here, it's just gone up so much.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know what steps we can take to make it more broad-reaching, which will curb that earlier problem. potentially, because I think I'm not sure exactly what number of groups could be in violation of this.
A substantial number, sure. I would safely guess. Having gone through the special fee stuff last year,
was that a request for information? Did we ever get an idea of how many groups?
No, it's something.
I don't think we have good records on groups.
That could be interesting, trying to get that information.
I mean, really, the Senate is supposed to know how to say no.
Putting the groups in the ballots, and then the fact that they're actually being voted in speaks more of people voting, that if they want to spend tons and tons of money on special fee groups, it's certainly within their rights. It's the electorate. Yeah. If they're faced with it and they say yes, well...
There's a free rider problem here, because the electorate can vote yes. A person can vote yes on everything and then turn around
and
get a refund.
That's true. That's true, but that's sort of out of our scope.
And people do.
Yeah.
If the amount of the fee goes up, you've probably paid well over $1,000 during your time here in special fees, and if the number goes up, the number of people who are actually willing to pay their fee goes down.
There are lots of solutions to this, but it's outside of the scope of this case.
Yeah, we can. So,
I'm willing to agree here, but... You're the same thing you said to her. Don't do it again.
I'll be there.
That right there is not your sense.
Yeah. Don't do it again. So, at that point.
Closing punishments.
Anyone voting on this? So agreed to this remedy? Yay, nay? Feel free to say nay. It's yay.
Senator, you're getting what you're voting on?
Yeah.
In amongst all the
papers. You were saying waiting, but you're saying no, we're voting.
Oh, we're saying giving them 1 year, basically, and saying that the most recent election cycle we've gone through, all this stuff has been done, it's already been approved. So for the next year, this cannot happen. Try to say it with a straight face, so assuming the undergrad sent GSC, someone, whoever, appropriations people, and the groups, naturally yourselves included, well, of course you guys will. But we'll sort of realize.
Give the younger brother.
Yeah, there's no way he's getting to Stanford.
You guys want to play roulette then? You can take your chances.
Yeah, you can take your chances and see if it comes back. That would be the remedy. Is that in the next year, this would not happen.
For this particular group,
but hopefully, for this particular group, because they're here and they're aware of it, so we wouldn't have to. Hopefully, it wouldn't be brought back. For other groups,
When are you all graduating, by the way?
I'm a sophomore.
So you're around junior.
Okay, we're fine.
Okay.
Making the same violation, and here, after that,
you're at a disadvantage. We can't actively go out and start hammering on the groups, but however, the ASSU is aware that, if there's one group's breaking the Constitution, all the other ones, they're doing the same thing, are too, and there's a procedure by which they have to, all special fee budgets have to be approved, they have to go through appropriations, they have to go through the GSC funding share, also does through all the joint groups and the grad only groups. And so it has to go through all that process, and it has to go through the undergrad
concert method, basically.
There's more.
It's the only one that this applies to.
Not exactly. The double charging applies to many.
Of the joint.
The joint grad undergrad. Of the joint grad undergrad concert network would be one of them, definitely.
That's the only one, though.
Stanford Chamber Chorale is another one which you guys actually brought up. You're right.
But the martial arts program is not joint. The groups that are joint are the Daily, SCN, KZSU, SCBN, Club Sports, ISIS, and the Chamber Chorale. I think there's the legal counseling of the speakers, I believe, are all of them. And the leadership program.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of them, and ideally what would happen is that because they have to go through this whole
We can also send an email to the chairs of the appropriate committees saying, be aware that this ruling has taken place, and
that will be done. That will be done. So what will happen is that when all these groups reapply and they go through this procedure next year, hopefully that'll get caught. And so it will not just be you guys being singled out. That would be my explanation of that. And if it winds up being you guys being singled out, someone will bring up the case. Someone will want to see their name listed on the daily, and they'll bring it up. A safe bet. I'm not saying that's why you did it, Henry.
No, I'm just saying it would work.
But
it would work.
Yeah. But Stanford Daily, yeah, they showed up, but meh, whatever. We can send them our minutes. But that would be my view of what ideally would happen if this ruling passed, etc. So are we clear on it then?
The Daily really didn't show up.
These
people are from the Daily.
I sent EIC a Daily. I figured that would work, right?
Back in the day, the Constitutional Council would call a meeting, and the Daily was there.
The last one we had had the Daily because they were one of the
back in the day. The Daily was usually a party to one of the cases.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah. So okay, yay nay.
This is for the
unconstitutional, giving them a year to remedy things. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just have one more question.
Fire away.
As much as you guys. I know targeting your meetings blog is very easy to target because the SB is prohibitive, I think, for a lot of people. Whereas like any other group, forming group, whatever, it's like $3 or $5 or at most. And I guess the question I have is on the depriving thing, is it a function of the ticket price? Because if the case were, a few more dollars, is that something that wouldn't be depriving? Should they still be, should they not be able to collect even a dollar nominal, even if it's forced? I mean, chances are in these small cases that they're not going to turn away people.
Yeah.
But
the argument I make with that is this: I think it has to be pretty cut and dry. It has to be charge, no charge.
Sure.
Because, once you start finding that gray area, having seen many groups' budgets in the past, many of them do these suggested donation. I've seen that. It actually can work. If it's, $5 or $10. If it's $75 per couple, it would be more difficult to implement that, of course. But in those smaller cases, I think that's easily enough avoided by those sorts of things. It happened to events where they do that, and they actually, in some cases, wound up doing better.
I always understood the whole special fee, general fee system to be shooting for. It's going to sound a little silly this way, but more or less the Stanford should be a pay-one-price experience. I'm using a little bit of an amusement park analogy there, but kind of that you pay into the system with those two fees, and then you get to play at all of the things that you pay into. You get to ride all the rides, yeah.
Yeah, including stealth.
But I mean, it does seem, I definitely can see where your event is too high cost to make that possible, and so opting out of that system is okay also.
Okay, so moving.
So I'm a yes, by the way.
Yay? Okay, so yay.
Yeah,
exactly. Go and ask more, feel free.
I guess. based on the Constitution, I don't know that that it's completely stated black and white, because it doesn't state it black and white, and I'm trying to figure out what's in the best interest in the long term, right? Without considering too many of the problems that it does solve, or
Send up an interpreter for 1 second.
Yes.
Should we all withdraw our yeses if you want to pursue this more? So that we can sort it all out.
You made a yes. It's fine. It's okay. I guess. Okay. You guys have no more questions.
No, but you should.
Please.
Don't
that's not.
Let us stand
of course.
I guess because it doesn't say it, clearly. And I mean, I agree that Stanford should be a pay-one pricing, and things do get prohibited for a lot of students who won't even consider trying, because it's somewhat, I don't think it's accepted to go to groups and say, I can't afford to attend, and that's definitely a problem. Okay, so, but at the same time, it wasn't stated clearly, even though, it, you know, if it were stated, it would still be in the spirit of special fees, you know, trying to make fund groups that are accessible to all students. And on that note, I was just trying to figure out what the original framers wanted to access that.
I guess my answer would be, I think it's the second sentence of that subsection or whatever it is. This, I think, makes clearer what depriving means. Because the first sentence says, no student, you know, undergrad or graduate, can be deprived of service. And the second sentence says, grad students can't be paid more, or I'm sorry, grad students. In the case of an undergraduate group, grad students can't be charged more than the amount of the special fee. Which to me suggests that, you know, you have, there's this idea that, you know, in the case of an undergrad group, the undergrad is paid a certain amount. The grad students can be charged up to that amount for everything. And at that point, they have parity.
You lost me there.
Okay, because grad students have to pay $75, not whatever they earn.
I wrote that.
So what I'm referring to is the reverse. So I think the second sentence is very clear that, for example, with Viennese Ball, grad students couldn't be charged more than, what, $2, $3, whatever it is. And so I think in that context, you sort of have to interpret deprive of services to mean charging anything, because otherwise, graduate students would be capped at, what, $3, and undergrads could be charged anything, and they've already paid.
Is there room in that interpretation for the delta? Like, graduate students can't be charged more than $77?
It says, during a given year, a student organization may not charge a total amount greater than its per capita special fees for services provided to members of the association outside of the association organization's funding or population. So that's, I mean, I don't think there's room in that for the delta.
Well, I mean, I guess I can comment a little on this, because I think, maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I think that might partly be my contribution to the amendment in 1999.
I can't hear you at all.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Okay, so, I mean, yeah, sure. As written, it does say can't charge more than the greater than the per capita special fee, and there's nothing unambiguous about that. And in terms of the delta, I would say in discussing that, in writing that clause, we didn't discuss the delta, basically because I think the understanding was that it wasn't an issue, pretty much. The understanding was this kind of pay one price understanding as being a pre-existing condition. And I think that was the understanding. And it was a lot of people involved. I mean, it was the whole Senate leadership at the time, Graduate Student Council, outgoing and incoming presidents. But it was not explicitly, the delta was not explicitly discussed. It's just, yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of weird to, like, I know it's kind of odd to know, like, the intent of, and, like, some of us are in dead yet.
Sorry. I mean, okay. I am okay now.
Okay, so no further questions then from anyone? Cool, okay, so same as before, yay, are you good, yay? So yay, so it's agreed then that you guys have basically 1 year to work things out, and any ASSU people listening might want to know too that anything that this is going to have an impact on other groups as well. Of course, I'm saying that to no one in particular. So, and from that, we'll have our opinion. I think we have a week to have this written, and it'll be pretty much what you heard here. Maybe not quite an exact verbatim of what the recorder picked up, but something pretty close. So, on that note, is there any other business for this evening? Think of anything? Okay. Thanks all for coming. Call this meeting to close at 7:18 p.m. So hour 15. I was saying an hour.
Yeah, actually, I have one little comment, and after the, just which is that the fact that you all responded so completely made it very easy to evaluate all this.
It made things much. Yeah. Thank you guys. You do appreciate it.
Do you even know where the nearest trash can is? There's one right over there.
Behind you, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, right there.
I just have to hire a quick one on your